Today, on You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein. It's a film club edition, and I am joined by comedian and podcast host Jonas Barnes to talk about his film club pick, Climax.
You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein in the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play and rewind this. This speech, it is timeless. Love it like it, or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it isn't tough. We spend a lot of time at the cinema. It's just me and my friends, we watch plenty stuff. For movies, yeah, I've been above. Whether big or they small, no, for me, don't make a difference. Love them. You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein in the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play and rewind this. This speech, it is timeless. Love it like it, or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it didn't hit. No, gotta lose it. Watch movies with my friends, bringing joy, that's the blueprint. So come on and let's do this. Leave pain behind us and relax your mind. Come watch a movie with Silas.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein. I am your host, Silas Lindenstein. This is a film club edition. Film club, as you know, is when I find one of my friends, one of my associates, and I say, hey, give me three movies. And they give me three movies, and I pick one. And we do a film club. We do a discussion about this. So this involves you as well. You can go watch this movie and then come back and join in on the discussion with us. And this week's film is the 2018 French film Climax. I am joined by comedian, podcaster, and film critic Jonas Barnes. He's in New York City, and we got together via Zoom after he assigned me this film. I asked people to tell me their favorite film, and he mentions in this isn't necessarily his favorite film, but it's a movie that, you know, I know Jonas is a big horror fan, so I expected him to give me a film that was going to mess my mind up. And because of that challenge, he decided, how about this one? He does really like this film. 2018 Climax. It is a Gaspar Noé film, if you may be familiar with him. It's director, writer, co-edited this. It's drama horror. Runs 1 hour and 37 minutes and features an ensemble cast of 24 actors led by Sophia Boutelet. The plot is set in 1996 and follows a French dance troupe holding a days-long rehearsal in an abandoned school. The final night of rehearsal is a success, but the group's celebratory after-party takes a dark turn when the communal bowl of sangria is spiked with LSD, sending each of the dancers into agitated, confused, and psychotic states. Now, I'm reading here from Wikipedia. The film is notable for its unorthodox production, having been conceived and pre-produced in 4 weeks and shot in chronological order in only 15 days. Although Noah conceived of the premise, the bulk of the film was unrehearsed, on-the-spot improvisation by the cast, who were provided no lines of dialogue beforehand and had almost complete liberty as to where to take the story and characters. Climax features unusual editing and cinematography choices and includes several long takes, including one lasting over 42 minutes. The cast of the film consists almost exclusively of dancers who, aside from Boutelet and one other, had no previous acting experience. Climax premiered on May 10th, 2018, in the director's Fortnite section at the 2018 Cannes Film Festival, where it won the Art Cinema Award. It was theatrically released in France on September 19th, 2018, by Wild Bunch, and in Belgium on November 21st, 2018, by O Brother Distribution. The film received positive reviews, with much praise for its direction, cinematography, soundtrack, choreography, performances, although some criticized its violence and perceived lack of story. So that's the background on it, okay? And in case you don't, go catch up on it before we get into this discussion. And I have a lot of thoughts about the film, and I really enjoyed it. So by the way, before we get into this, I want to let you know I have one more that I've pre-recorded a film club. And so I'm going to be, I'm going to be reaching out to a new set of people, new set of friends to see what films I could be watching with them. And I'm pretty excited. So there'll always be new people I'm invited. Just because you weren't on the list of the first recordings I did doesn't mean I'm not looking forward to talking to you. So if you have a film club suggestion, you know where to message me. You can message me at silas@blackandahalf.com or on Facebook. Just find me on there. And we should be friends of some sort, or know me, or you can throw a suggestion out and I can find somebody who's interested in that film. But here I am, very interested in this film. So we're about to pop this over to the Zoom interview. So thank you again for joining me. Thank you for coming on this podcast or watching the video that we're showing. You can check this out on YouTube or on the podcast. Either way, go to yourwatchingamovie.com and see whichever form you want to view this in. And also don't forget, I do have reviews of the latest and greatest and not so good films out there on that site as well. Here we go. Film club edition for Climax with my guest, Jonas Barnes. Jonas Barnes. One of the things I like about you the most is I can pronounce your name with no problem. That's
you're one of the few. There's so many people. There's so many people that screw up my first name. They just say, like, I literally had a guy one time go, "Did you say Jonas?" I'm like, "That's not a name. Like, you just made that up to mess my name up." Like, what are you doing?
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I don't know how that would happen. So thank you for being very Caucasian in that. Here's a funny, I do find this funny. So I asked people for this film club to tell me, "Hey, give me one or three movies that you're like, this movie meant a lot to me. It affected me in some way. It's one that I can talk about." And you say the name of something I've never heard of. I know you're a horror fan, so I expected that. And you say Climax. I was like, okay, he has a lot of sexual materials I remember in the past for jokes. So perhaps Climax is sexual of some sort. And
not
then,
exactly.
Then I saw the, I just saw this last night. So I,
oh, wow. So it's still fresh.
Oh yeah. Very fresh, embedded into me. I look at, I look at the Amazon Prime description of it, and I was like, French. It's like, what? Subtitled film? And I was like, I remember, okay, Jonas is a film buff. I was not expecting like a, I was like, well, is this an artsy movie? Is he about to
in a way
blow me away with the, like, oh, he's a cinephile. Oh, he's really into these deep movies. And then I watched this and I was like, who hurt you more than I was like, this film? Okay, folks, I haven't described. Let me get that. This movie is called Climax, directed by Gaspar
Noé. It's Noé. Gaspar Noé. Yeah.
Okay. The description, it's a 2019 film. Came out March 1st. They describe it, when members of a dance troupe are lured to an empty school, drug-laced sangria causes their jubilant rehearsal to descend into a dark, explosive nightmare as they try to survive the night and find out who's responsible before it's too late.
It was immediately too late. Yeah. There was no
question on that. Budget of $2.9 million. That's weird. It said box office 1.7, but I also saw a different box office stat.
I want to say something really quick. This is the thing about, so you're not familiar with Gaspar Noé, are you?
No.
Okay.
No way with Noé.
No way am I. So here's the thing. His name when it's attached to a film brings up a lot of reactions from people, because he's a provocateur type of filmmaker. So he makes films that are purposefully jarring, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Like, he makes films that are about things that are hard to get through as a subject.
Okay.
And he does it in a way that you are either into or you're not. Like, he does it in a way that is like, it affects you as a person after you've seen one of his films. And the reason that I picked this one, which we'll get into, but the reason that I picked this one specifically is the first time I saw it, I walked out of the theater and I said, what the fuck did I just watch? Like, I legitimately was like, I was taken aback. I was like, did I hate that movie or did I love that movie? I don't know. And it's because it caught me so far off guard that I was like, I have to see this a second time. So I saw it a second time. I was like, I have to see it a second time to know how I actually feel about this movie. So I saw it a second time and I was like, this movie is brilliant, but it's horrific without being a full horror film. Like,
I was starting to wonder, like, is this about to be a slasher? What's going on? But like, I could see the argument for horror, even in a,
psychological. It's a psychological horror film.
Psychological horror. I guess I'm not used to seeing that. I love the genres on Rotten Tomatoes. Says drama, music, horror.
Right.
Like, music? Okay.
Dramatic horror musical? All right.
Like, I don't often see where it says rated R. Like, it popped up on the thing saying, oh, nudity. And I was like, awesome. Strong language, drug use. And on Rotten Tomatoes, it says disturbing content. As just disturbing content. You know what? Okay, this is what threw me off about the box office. One.
Yeah.
Earlier, I thought, I was like, oh my God, this was a huge hit I didn't know about because it made $813 million here. No, it made $813,000. That makes more sense.
Limited release. It was a limited release film.
I gotta say, when it turned on, I was a little, though, once I realized it was an A24 film, I was like, oh, well, hold on here.
Right.
Because they tend to see stuff that maybe I wouldn't think would be for me until I saw. I could see I did have the idea of like, should I watch that again? Like, cause there was a point when I don't even know when it started that I started going, is this in one shot? Wait,
there's a lot of it that is.
Yeah. That's what I was like. Well, no. Cause I remember the disturbingly weird cuts between couples, for no better word. And then I was like, wait, it's been one shot since they started moving down. I think there's a good 45 minutes of this, right?
Yeah. So the opening dance sequence, first off, I want to mention that.
Yeah.
The opening dance sequence is incredible. And it's all done in one take. Like, so it's all these people that are doing their own different versions of their dance, but it all melds together in chaos, like, but in synchronicity at the same time. Like, it's a very chaotic dance, but it's all done in one take. It's all done in one, like, one fluid shot. And from what I've seen on it and from what I've actually, like, researched and stuff on it, is that they didn't retake it. Like, they didn't, this was not something that they rehearsed, like, in a sense of, like, filming.
Oh.
Like, they rehearsed it before they filmed anything, but then they were like, okay, we're just going to film this now. And then they filmed it, and then they just left what they filmed. Like, so it was not like a thing where they were like, oh, you screwed up, we got to go back and do it again. Like, it wasn't that at all. It was just like, we're going and this is what's going to come out.
Yeah.
Which is massively impressive. Once you see the movie, that opening dance sequence, that by itself being one take, is very, very impressive.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because it's just unusual in films. Films are very complicated in that, but there's technical reasons to be bewildered how they can do one takes. But I often think about plays. Sure. I do plays all the time and we're one take. We just do it once. And some nights we're flawless. Sometimes nearly, or feels like it, or maybe people wouldn't. People think it was perfect and they had no idea the mistakes that happened. And so I don't know why I'm still always so impressed with it, even when I realized, okay, well, they got like one camera going through this. It's there's a pretty steadiness of light in there. But the fact that you can hide the camera the whole time is really cool.
I think the most impressive part of a one take type of thing is that everything has to go right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like everything has to go properly because if not, the entire thing is screwed up. Yeah. And at that point, do you go back and reshoot the entire thing as one take, or do you cut your losses and go like, oh shit, we got to do this from, you know, 20 minutes in or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
But like, the most recently famous quote unquote one take film is the war movie
1917,
right, which is not in one take.
No, it's like four,
but like it four looks times. Like it's in one take.
Oh, they're really good. Yeah,
and it was very cleverly edited in a way that makes it look like the entire movie is a one take. So when that movie came out, everybody was like, oh my god, it's a one take film, blah 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 blah, and it's not, but it looks like it, you know.
It's not, it's four, man, it's four. Yeah. So not impressed.
Right. Yeah. Very comic book guy from the Simpsons. I did not like it. But that was like one of those things that came out like it sold the movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like everybody was just like, oh god, this is a one take film. And it's kind of like when the Blair Witch Project came out and everybody said that it was real, you know, like that sold the movie. And then afterwards it was like, okay, that wasn't real, but also that was kind of cool, you know.
But early internet, enough to spread rumors, but not enough to confirm.
Yeah.
It was a brilliant time of being able to market things like that to go, no, I heard about, and people arguing about whether it was real or not.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, no, man, people were just watching this and it just flipped out and someone got a hold and distributed it. Like, what?
Like, this is an underground?
I can't verify this. I have no way to verify. I just
My favorite thing about the Blair Witch lore is what they did to the actors. Like, so the actors, they gave them each different scripts with different endings, and each one of the actors acted based off of their script and ending that none of the actors knew about. So when one of them quote unquote died, none of the other actors knew that they were going to disappear in the movie, because in their script, that person was not disappearing. So their reactions to a person like being gone when they woke up and their like clothes being shredded all over the campsite and everything, their reactions to that was very real, because they were like, what the hell is going on? Like, the script doesn't say this. Like, so that was kind of a cool thing that they did just with the actual cast.
I was curious. I did think during this film, during climax, I go, do they know what they were signed up for? Like, what is like, so no way.
Yeah.
He's known enough before that people signing up for a No Way film,
they know what they're getting into. They know it's gonna be weird.
And well, I was like, they're French, so they don't even care about the nudity, probably.
Well, the thing is with Gaspar Noé's films is that when he does a film, it's automatically going to be a controversial film, because that's the only kind of film he makes.
Yeah.
So he makes films that are on purpose controversial, but he does them in a way that is very watchable. And even if it's super intense, you can like step back from it and be like, okay, I can see why this is a good movie, or I can see why this is an effective movie, or whatever it is. But the one that he's most infamous for is called Irreversible. And Irreversible is a tough watch, because it's like a rape revenge movie, but it's done in a way that is particularly like artsy, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah.
And it makes the first 25 minutes of the movie very hard to watch. But once you get through that first 25 minutes and you see the rest of the movie,
yeah,
all of it makes sense. But that first 25 minutes is like, if you Like you gotta make it through that trench to get to the part that's redeeming about the movie. But that's like his most, absolutely his most controversial movie. That's the one that makes people kind of shudder when they hear his name attached to a movie. They're like, oh God, what am I getting into? You know?
It's weird. I was thinking like, God, how, like, there are elements of this are they really like, right? So, but I was like, it's so, I could see why someone would hate this.
Sure.
Absolutely. Right.
So I know a handful of people that vehemently hate it.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, why? It almost seems like a film like this should make people go, look, people don't see my vision for film, but that shouldn't stop me from making what I want to do. Because maybe you will find this fan base and getting to keep making it. Because, I mean, certainly this would never have made mainstream cinemas at all. Like, no. This is a film I can't even describe to my wife. Like,
right.
How to describe it. I think the acting's good.
Acting's very good.
I have wondered in my head, can I tell if a movie's badly acted in another language? Like, do I know if they're saying the lines weird?
You can. Oh, you can.
I've wondered. I wouldn't know if they're like, sometimes I have to keep, like, as a director, I would have to have someone keep doing a line because, like, you're saying that line weird. Like, why are you saying that word like that? I would never know if the actor was like, had this weird accent that I had no idea why.
Have you ever seen Dario Argento's Dracula?
No, but I think I've seen clips or something. Okay, but not,
so that's
like
a very badly acted foreign film.
Okay.
And it is, I love Dario Argento, and that is one of the worst movies I've ever seen. And now when that movie, I have it on Blu-ray because I got it in like a horror pack thing.
Yeah.
And when I got it, I was like, oh shit, Dario Argento doing Dracula. And then I watched it and I was like, oh shit, that was terrible. I was like, I love Dario. What happened? What happened here? There's like a CGI praying mantis in it for some reason that's human sized. I don't know why. Why is that there? Like, it just is.
Yeah.
And the acting is horrible. The acting is atrocious and most of it is in Italian and you can tell it's bad acting.
Okay. Like, all right, good. Okay. So I can't tell. I was worried. What if I can't even tell? What if I have no sense of what something should be like? I don't know.
So I want to say this because you just saw this movie and I've seen this movie. I've seen this movie a handful of times now and I'll tell you why I picked this movie and why I enjoyed this
please,
movie.
Please, okay? Please. I need to know.
So again, the first time I saw it, didn't really know what I just saw. It was very shocking, but it was also kind of like so chaotic that my brain couldn't really wrap around exactly what I was watching. So that's why I watched it a second time. So after I watched it the second time, I understood what Gaspar Noé was doing and I understood why it was a horror film. The reason that it was a horror film is because once that lace sangria takes hold, you start to see everybody's individual nightmare coming to fruition, because one of the things that's terrifying about taking drugs, especially hallucinogens, is that if one person in the party has a bad trip, all of a sudden everybody has a bad trip. Like, that's just the way that hallucinogens work a lot of times anyway. So with this movie, when the hallucinations or like when the hallucinatory nightmare starts to happen, you start to see everybody's true like demon come out, like their truly bad part of their personality come out. And then also some people, it's not necessarily their bad part of their personality, but it's what they're most afraid of, starts to come out in the way that they act, in the way that they respond to things, in the way that they start interacting with people. So when it comes to most psychological movies, you never get to see that POV of somebody going through their own nightmare scenario. It's always done by like from a different POV or like from somebody watching it or something like that. Whereas this one, like, you see it happening to them in quote unquote real time.
Yeah.
And you also see the good parts of some people's personality come out, like the DJ, Big Daddy.
Yeah.
Like, you see him, that real paternal nature come out of him, where he's trying to protect like the weakest one of the group. And he's trying to like, you know, help them out. And he's trying to get the other ones to stay away from him. Like, so you see that good part come out, but then you see the girl that was pregnant. You see her nightmare scenario happen. You know, and you see the way that she reacts to that. You see like each one of these couples or each one of these like individual characters have such a deeply traumatic part of their character that comes out in this like just chaotic hallucinatory thing. But the way that he filmed it, well, again, when I watched it a second time, the way that he filmed it was actually very accessible. But the first time you see it, it's so jarring that you can't really pick apart like how accessible it actually is. That first watch is just a whirlwind of, oh shit, what's happening? Like,
yeah,
it really is. And also there's parts of it that like legitimately make you feel real feelings when something happens to a person, you know?
Yeah.
And none of it is like gory. Like it's not a gory horror film really at all. There's a couple of times where there's some blood, but then there's a couple of times like one person gets set on fire. And that's that was also shockingly done in one take, and it was a wild take.
Yeah.
That was a wild part.
Yeah.
But like there's certain parts, like what happens with the mom and the son. Yeah. The mom and Tito. Like that.
Because I warned people in the beginning that there's spoilers in these discussions. What, I didn't get what happened to the mom.
Okay, like, so the thing, the mom killed herself.
Oh, okay.
Straight up. Yeah.
Okay. So, I was trying to figure out, did somebody go after her?
No. So what happened with her, and you find this out at the end of the movie when the emergency people are coming through and trying to figure out like who's alive, who's not, type of thing. So when she locks Tito in the room to kind of keep him away from all the chaos and everything, like she's trying to be a mom and she's trying to keep him away from all the, you know, just the complete fucking chaos that's happening out in this dance studio.
Don't touch this and it'll kill you. And you're going to lock him in there.
Like right.
Like that's the spot you're going to lock him in.
That was a thing like, cause I'm not a parent and I could not imagine being a parent in that situation where, you know, that you just took acid, you know, that he just took acid, you know, that you're freaking out, which means that you know that he's going to freak out. And now you just locked him in a closet full of electricity.
Yeah.
Like, it's a weird choice. Then as soon as you realize that the key is gone, like, there's no other, your brain is gone at that point, because there's no other thing that your brain does is other than I have to get in this room. Yeah. I have to get in this room to get my kid. And then when the electricity shorts out and you don't hear the screaming anymore, then it's just like, oh no. Yeah. Like, that was the part where I kind of like, I had to step back and be like, fuck, like that one, like that hurt. And that doesn't happen often in a movie, like where you get that kind of an emotional response to a thing that's put on film.
Yeah.
Like, again, not a parent, but I felt like a parent in that moment of just going, oh my God, like, what would you do in that scenario? Like, what's the next move? She literally cut her wrists. Like, that's what she did once she realized what had happened. But like, to pull an emotional response out of an audience like that, I think is a skill that a lot of filmmakers don't have, especially in horror, like in psychological horror or thriller, just because a lot of it is like kind of like a jump scare or like, you know, a monster or gore or whatever, you know. Whereas this, like, you feel like you feel actual human emotions and guttural ones too, at times.
Yeah.
That's what I liked about the movie, is that it was a very emotional film, and also like that's what sucked me into it, and also that's why I've rewatched it, because I've watched it like once the shock got taken over, like, you know, after the first watch. That's why I watched it multiple times now, to kind of like really absorb the movie. Because once you absorb, like once you actually watch it with fresh eyes, where you're not as shocked anymore, it has so many layers. Like, it to the characters.
What was the woman crawling in the beginning? Which one was she?
So she was the one that got kicked out they got shoved out in the snow.
Oh, it was a girl. I thought it was a guy that they threw out in the snow.
No, it was a girl. And the girl that it was the girl that was pregnant, who wasn't drinking any of the sangria, because they thought that she was the one that spiked it because she wasn't drinking any of it. The reason that she wasn't drinking any of it is because she was pregnant.
Wait, that's the one they... No, she's the one who they beat up.
Yeah, and then they threw her outside.
I thought they kicked someone else out, and they said, we threw the wrong person out.
They did. They kicked out another guy, too. He froze to death. He just died.
That's what
there.
I mean. The guy.
Yeah. The guy just died. She was the one that crawled out into the snow to try to find help. So in the beginning of the movie, when you see her crawling in the snow, that's her.
Yeah. Okay, that's what I was trying to... I was like, where... I thought I had seen her in there still at the end, so...
No, she was the one that they found outside.
I kind of started losing track of which one is that?
Who's... Right. And then, like, also, that's where you could see, like, you see the dude that's really homophobic. You see him come out. You see his nastiness come out. You see the dudes that are racist. And you see
these
also...
homophobic? Was they all... First, I was getting confused on who was... Like, I don't get who want... I was like, they all seem pretty fluid on who they want to bang.
Right. Like, they did. There was one guy that kind of just wanted to bang everybody.
Was it the black guy? Was he homophobic? Was that the one?
Yes. There was the guy. And there was the guy that was like the really broed out black dude that was very broy.
How he was talking about the way his penis was going to split people and stuff.
Right. Yeah. He was the one that was getting real gross about it. Yeah. He was the one that was also super homophobic. And then there was the brother and sister, which was yikes.
That was I was like, oh no. I was like, what am I watching, a play? Jesus.
What
oh
is
my
happening?
God.
But that was also another part of it that I kind of found interesting, because you see another side. So I'm white passing, even though I'm not technically white. Like I'm technically Asian, but I'm very white passing. The Norwegian side of me comes out in my appearance, in my privileges, in my everything. So for all intents and purposes, I'm a white dude, and I, I have the privileges that come along with being a white dude. And when I see racism, I see it from a white dude's perspective, because that's how I've grown up. In this movie, there's a racism aspect to it that is also something that shines some light onto my perspective, because I've never seen it before. And it's internal racism within races with all these people that are also from France, you know, and stuff like that. So there was also that interesting aspect to it as well, because it's a part of, you know, it's a part of culture that I haven't seen before, that I haven't experienced. And it was the way that they painted it on film was very interesting.
There was a time I watched a bunch of subtitled films, and I feel like when I do, I get better at watching it and absorbing more. So like, I feel like I'm at a point right now where I don't see enough subtitled films that I'm like, I kind of have to watch them twice to just absorb completely in the story. So, or to get pulled in.
This one goes back and forth too. It goes back and forth between English and subtitles.
Then I wanted to know about that too. I was like, oh, so was it subtitled? Was the English subtitled in France?
Well, I think it's also because Gaspar Noé is French. And so a lot of times his films have French intertwined into the script. So like Irreversible
was not a French film?
It is a French film. Okay. But a lot of times it's dual language.
Okay.
So
which is good. I actually think that's good. I love that.
It does. It helps.
I think that was one of my favorite choices in West Side Story.
Oh, to have different language.
Steven Spielberg, when he decided to have both languages spoken. I was like, that's wonderful. Good.
Right. And Gaspar Noé does that with a lot of his movies. Cause like he almost predominantly casts, foreign actors in his films, not necessarily French ones. So like he does a movie called Enter the Void, and the main star is Paz de la Huerta. So like you have her speaking Spanish, also mixed in with some French, mixed in with some English. So like it's this whole, you know, conglomeration. And then Irreversible has Italian, and it also has French, because Monica Bellucci is the main star in that one. So like the way his movies the way he makes movies always has it's multiracial.
I like that. That's nice. That's nice. What do you think the point of it is to
of the movie?
What do you think the lesson? Is there a lesson from this film?
So, again, with the whole spoiler thing, at the end, the person that's responsible for it all is somebody who's just doing an experiment on LSD. Yeah. Like, it's the German girl who, in the beginning of the movie, talks about how all of her roommates do drugs and she's sick of it and she needs to get away from it. And then it turns out she's the one that's been doing the drugs the whole time. That's why her reaction to everything was, aside from her pissing on the floor, that was a little weird. But aside from that, her reaction to everything else was pretty like even keel. Yeah. It's because she'd been taking LSD drops in her eyeballs. Like, so she was like the one. At the end of the movie, it was essentially an experiment to see what would happen in a group of people, in a group of multiple different types of people from different backgrounds, from different things, like what would happen in that scenario. How would the drugs affect everybody?
Was that her intent?
Yeah. Because at the end of it shows also the book that she's reading, which is literally an experiment. Yeah. It's an LSD experiment. So essentially for her, it was a science experiment. Hmm. But it also caused people to die. Like it was a horrific thing that she did. Because ultimately she was the villain. Like she was the one that, you know, put this whole thing into play. But I think the point of the movie and like the thing that you can pull out of the movie is how to get like how important it is to be in touch with your own traumas. Because if you don't have a grip on the things that traumatize you, or if you don't have an understanding of the things that traumatize you, they can take you over. Like they can destroy you. And in a case like this, you have somebody who has control over what she's doing. And that's the girl that spiked everybody.
Yeah.
Because she's in tune with it. She understands it. She knows what she's doing. She knows how the drugs affect her. She knows what her traumas are. Like she's very aware of them. Whereas everybody else, they're kind of sheltered. They're a little bit held back. You know, they're a little bit, they've got some things pushed down. And if you look at each individual character, you can see that in each individual character's thing. Like you've got the brother and sister, where you've got the brother who's super gross and the sister who's super not into it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so you've got them. You've got the mom who's trying to be protective as a mom, but also trying to handle all this chaos. She doesn't have a handle on it yet, you know?
Yeah.
You've got like, it goes throughout. If you look at each one of the characters, each one of them has that main vein that goes through them where they have something about them that is a traumatic thing that they don't have control over. And once the LSD hits them, that's what come out. That's what actually comes out and like kind of destroys everything. It's straight up as a character study.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, what was to say the four things something should be about definitely felt like I definitely saw the character come through. Okay. What are your three favorite things then about this film?
The filming I thought was brilliant in the way that it was chaotic, but also controlled.
I would agree that would be on one of the top would be the cinematography on this.
Yeah. Because it was chaotic, but you could tell that it was very controlled. Like it wasn't shaky cam chaotic. Mm-hmm. It was done in a way to purposefully give you a response to the thing that is happening on the screen from the person's POV. So like when he would turn the camera upside down, that was very specific to fuck with your perception. Like that was very much on purpose, you know? So the things like that, where he would do those things, that was super impressive to me because it worked very well. Like there was times where it was jarring to the point where I had to like pause it for a second so that I didn't get a headache, you know?
Yeah.
But you could tell that it was very much done on purpose. I would say cinematography for sure. I would say the acting definitely was one of them because I think everybody that was in the movie played their part very well. And they did it against very different other characters. Like there was not one character in that movie that was the same. Each one of them was very individual. Mm-hmm. And to be able to act that well against those other, you know, like opposite cast characters, that's tough. Especially for a mostly unknown cast. Like if you look at all of their IMDb's, most of them are unknown actors, even in France.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah. So this isn't like a lot of people that have been in a shitload of movies. These are people that have been in a couple movies here and there for the most part, aside from the main actress. The main actress whose name is escaping me right now. She has been in a bunch of Sophia Boutella. She's been in a bunch of stuff. But aside from her,
I think it, especially things like this, I think casting unknowns is a really good piece. It lets it feel a little bit more like a story that you're dropping into. Yeah. It feels organic, even if it's not, because you haven't seen the tricks that these people do yet.
Right. And then the third thing is the setting. The fact that it's in that abandoned school gives it a very claustrophobic feel. Mm-hmm. Even though, like, in it, that has nothing to do with the fact that they're in the middle of nowhere in the mountains of France. Like, you don't even, like, that part of it doesn't even come into play until the end.
Yeah.
Or like in the beginning and the end. The very beginning and the very end, those are the only two times that it clicks that you're like, oh shit, they're in the mountains and nobody can get to them.
Yeah. I agree with all those.
Yeah.
Why were there credits in the beginning?
Because Gaspar Noé is weird. That's why.
Were those credits for that film?
Yeah. So what he did is so here's another thing with Noé's films. He always does something funky with the credits.
Okay.
It's always something he does.
I was trying to figure out, is this a film? Is he trying to trick us that this is a film, like the ending of some other film just happened?
He also treated it like a extended, very messed up music video. Like, that's why a lot of things that were happening in it, like with lighting and with certain flashing stuff and like with the credits rolling in the middle of it, or like randomly just having a break, like a techno breakdown, like right in the middle of the movie. Like, and also I think it was kind of a odd way of breaking the tension of what was happening.
Yeah.
Because you had all this really heavy, weighty stuff. And then all of a sudden it breaks out into this credit roll with like techno music happening and stuff like that, where it kind of gives you a breather where you're still looking at it going, what the hell's going on? But you still get that emotional breather, even if it's just for like a minute or two. And then it goes back into the, you know, back into the chaos. But it leads to why the movie is called Climax. It's the end of the trip. It's the climax of the, you know, the drug.
Oh, am I just dirty that I went?
No, everybody immediately thinks it's coming. That's exactly what everybody thought. Like
I don't do drugs, so I'm not like, I don't know what the terminology is in some. So I didn't know that's what a climax also could be.
To be fair, most of the people did have sex at the end of the movie as the come down happened, which is common with hallucinogens. Like it's kind of like when you take something like LSD or Molly or a lot of hallucinogenic drugs, one of the parts of the come down is that you get aroused. So when that happens, your endorphins kick in, hormones go crazy. And a lot of times people will end up having sex at the end of a trip.
Why would you tell somebody, other than that you like this film, why would you tell people to watch this? Why do you think someone should watch this film?
Okay, I do need to be very transparent about the reason that I told you to watch this film, though. Okay. Because on the Facebook post, when you were looking for guests and I said I was into it, you said, you're probably going to give me something that's going to scar me. And I said, yep, I got the movie.
If I had not said that, would you have picked a different film?
I probably would have picked Beetlejuice, to be honest.
Oh, really? Like, really? Oh, yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Because honestly, Beetlejuice is my favorite movie of all time. Okay. And I could talk about that movie for hours. But the reason that I chose this movie is not only because you challenged me to scar you, and I was like, this one will do it without going too far, but also because this is the other thing about it. It's a very complicated psychological horror movie.
Yeah.
And I appreciate those because of the fact that I am a horror film fan, because I am a movie buff, because I watch all sorts of different kinds of movies. I appreciate a bad movie for being a bad movie. You know, like, okay. I'll watch like a cheesy B movie for fun. Like, I have entire franchises on physical media full of just bad movies. Like, yeah. The Puppet Master movies, terrible, but they're fun, you know? Like, to give you an example. But then when it comes to psychological movies, psychological thrillers, especially, or psychological horror films, when those are bad, it's offensive. Because it's like, if you're trying to be a horror film that's going to mess with my head,
yeah,
and you're going to phone it in, like, right. Absolutely not. Like, that pisses me off as a film fan, because then I'm like, now it's like, that to me is like cinematic blue balls, because it's just like, you know, like, this is supposed to be psychological, and now I'm walking away from this going, it's just going, ugh, I understood everything and all of it sucked. Like, you know, whereas with this one, again, because it affected me the way that it did when I watched it the first time, and I immediately had to go, I need to see that again. Because now I'm invested, because it shocked me enough to where I'm not 100% sure if I completely understand this movie.
Yeah.
But I understand enough of it to where I want to see it again so I can understand more of it. Because the themes that it puts on screen, even though it's done in a very, you know, artistic way, the themes that it puts on screen, I think, are also important. Because it deals with things like homophobia and racism and trauma and mental illness. And like, it deals with so many different things that are very deep subjects.
Yeah.
That when you translate them into a horror film, like, that's, to me, that's kind of brilliant. Even if it's done in a very, you know, like I said, a very fractured way.
Yeah.
Because I think if you didn't do it in a fractured way, it would kind of collapse under its own weight. And it would be almost too heady.
Yeah. I think I would tell someone to watch this film, certainly to see creativity set loose, right? Yeah. And like, yeah, what you can do with a camera and the different. It was almost jarring to see those little scenes in between those two couples. Was almost so jarring on how, like, in the very beginning when they would have these pairs and they were doing shots of these pairs together talking, I'm like, you're just gonna have the camera
right
at two people and switch between, not indicating who they're talking about. I don't know where they're standing. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? It breaks some rules of filmmaking that people just don't do,
right?
And I kind of like that it does it, like, just like, I don't, he did not give a shit what you think.
No.
And he's going to try it and do it and experiment. And at very least, it has a value in teaching people how you can do anything. You can touch on anything.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe people will hate it. Maybe people enjoy it, or they'll at least, I don't know, talk about it.
Well, yeah. Like, am I going to tell people if they're going to quote unquote enjoy this movie? No, it is not a feel good movie. Like, that's not what this is.
No.
It is not by any stretch of the imagination a feel-good movie. In fact, it's a very traumatic movie, but it's a traumatic movie by design, which I think, like, kind of what you were saying with the whole taking the camera and putting it to the each couple thing, that also, I think, was kind of a little bit of a brilliant character building way of doing it with the nature of this movie. Because what he did was literally go, I'm going to show you who all these people are, and I'm going to do it individually so that they stick with you. And then I'm going to turn this switch off and we're going to go ape shit, which is exactly what happened. Like, he showed you who everybody was. He gave you just enough of their background to know just enough to where you're just invested a little bit enough, you know, and then he flips the switch and then it goes into full chaos mode.
Yeah.
Which, again, also, I think the other thing I would tell people to watch this movie, especially if they're a filmmaker, watch it to see what you can do with one location.
Yeah. No, yeah.
Because there was some real creative stuff there. there was the way that the camera work like was done, the way the movement was done, the way that the perspective shifted. Like, it literally was just a big, it was a big empty school. And like, ultimately the entire set was one big room, a hallway, and a couple of bedrooms.
Yeah.
There wasn't much to it. And then they showed outside twice. And
you know what, that opening shot, you would almost sets you up to think that this would be a complexly shot. I mean, it is complexly shot, but
right.
Just that it's going to be a broader in scope movie.
Yeah.
And just this vast openness and then close in for the whole thing.
Right. And that was also what was kind of crazy about it, because it took an already isolated setting and then made it more claustrophobic as the drugs kicked in. And so like, the higher the hallucinations went, the more claustrophobic the film work and the camera work got. Yeah. And the more tightened up the shots would get, and the more it would focus on just one person and see what you see through their eyes for like extended chunks of time. And like, you would see it to where like, it would be one thing that was like tunnel vision, but then you would see in the peripherals, you would see like one dude getting the shit kicked out of him because they think he's a racist. And then you see the brother hitting on the sister over in this corner. And then you see Big Daddy over here to this side, but that's not the focus. The focus is this person who's trying to get to this person. But all those things in the peripherals, you see them, you're like, oh shit, but go back to them. Like, you know, like, it keeps you engaged the whole time.
Right.
Like, at no point, regardless of how hard that was at certain points to watch, at no point did I want to get up and walk away. There was a couple of times where I wanted to pause it and just take a breather.
Yeah.
But I never wanted to walk away from the movie. Mm-hmm. Even though there were many parts that could have easily made somebody want to be like, nope, I'm done. I'm out. Like,
yeah.
You know? And which is impressive to me. That's very impressive.
Okay. So, I mean, I as we're here at the end here, I mean, thank you for introducing me to this guy, the director, at very least. I think you succeeded with messing my brain. Your mission accomplished, sir. I'm bordering, because I always have this rating scale of love it, like it, or lose it, and like, I didn't love it. I it's somewhere between the like it and lose it, like, sure. Because there's some really interesting parts of it to me. I don't know how I like, we talked about, I think I maybe could recommend this film to a filmmaker.
Sure.
I don't know, to an average person, unless they said, what's the most fucked up film you've seen recently? I would go Climax.
And
you will not climax while watching this, I hope. But
and if you do, schedule so much more therapy. Like, no, I honestly would not recommend this to a regular moviegoer. That's not who this movie is for.
No.
It's for filmmakers. It's for people who really want to dive into a movie and start to look at all the like intricate parts of the movie. Like, it's somebody who's interested in the way that a film is being made. Like, the moving parts of a movie. This is not a movie that you sit down, have some popcorn, and just watch Climax. It's not that, like, that's not this kind of movie. Like, it really is not. But it is a brutally interesting movie, though.
Yeah.
Like, just everything about the way it's made. I can understand why it's not a love, for sure.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, it's not that kind of movie.
If I can do the watching again of it, it may earn a like it. Because it's subtitle, I feel like I need to absorb more of it, more of the dialogue. And
I feel like when you watch it a second time, and I will challenge you to watch it a second time. I feel like when you watch it a second time, you will pull a lot more out of the movie that you didn't catch the first time, because there's lots of little things that get lost because you're trying to pay attention to everything.
Yeah.
And there's a lot happening.
Yeah.
And it's very on purpose. But yeah, if you watch it a second time, you're going to start to notice other things about the characters. You're going to start to notice a more linear story, because there actually is a more linear story to it.
Yeah.
But you'll start to notice it. And by the end of it, like, the things that really shocked you the first time won't have that same effect.
Yeah.
But you'll absorb a hell of a lot more of what the actual movie was about. There's one line in the very beginning of the movie that kind of is kind of the telltale thing. And it's when the interviewer asks the youngest gay dancer, would you do anything for dance? And then he turns around and looks at him. He goes, what do you mean?
Yeah.
And that's like, that line is kind of like, should be the tagline for the whole movie.
Would you do anything for,
like, how passionate are you about your art? Really is like, what are you willing to sacrifice to be the best at what you do? Are you willing to do anything to make that sacrifice? What do you mean? And then this movie happens. You're like, oh, that's what you mean. Okay.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
All right.
If I ever come back, we'll do a much more lighthearted movie, like a Beetlejuice or something.
Yes, I will need a more lighthearted thing. We'll talk about that. I want to see all the sides of Jonas Barnes. Before we get you out of here, is the wrestling podcast like a regular thing?
Yeah, I have a wrestling podcast and specifically a horror podcast.
Okay, so
I have both of those things.
Can I get the names of each of those real quick?
Of course, yeah, man. The wrestling podcast just started out not like more than about 3-4 weeks ago with a fellow comic from New York named Josh Alba. That one is called the Monday Nitro Party.
Okay, and you're looking at, is this going back to old school wrestling and rewatching?
So right now we're doing a mix of both because it's WrestleMania season. So everything that's current right now is like kind of quote unquote important stuff when it comes to wrestling because it's WrestleMania season. So we're weaving in between that and old nostalgia content. So once WrestleMania season is over, we're going to go like really full into the nostalgia stuff.
Okay.
And like kind of breaking down the old, you know, the old WCW times and the old Monday Nitro times and stuff like that.
And then your horror podcast. So the name of that is the
Monday Nitro Party.
Monday Nitro Party. Okay, I knew that because I was like watching part of it. And then what's the name of your horror podcast?
Horror podcast is another goddamn horror podcast. Yep, that one is. That one we've been doing for a while now, and that one the guests and stuff that we do on that one is not just people that are involved with movies. Like we have musicians, we have comedians, we have all sorts of people. So we'll have to have you on sometime and talk and get deep into horror with you.
Okay. I have this. Yeah. That's weird. Like I'm so into Halloween. And like I recently just told somebody, they're like, and I also say like, yeah, I don't watch a lot of horror movies, but then I end up recommending all these horror movies or I really love the ones that I've seen. And I keep saying I'm not into them, but somehow I always keep watching them. And I think I have such a, my relationship with death is very scary. So I think I try to I dive into Halloween to try to make it less scary for me. And I think that's the appeal to some of the horror. Maybe I can make it less scary, and so I kicked my wife out when this was horror. I was like, yeah, you got to go. You're not going to watch it. I don't know anything else about it.
Yeah.
But I was so glad she was not anywhere near me. Okay. Another goddamn horror podcast. So everyone should check that out.
I'll do this as a test for you. We do at the end of all of our episodes on Another Goddamn Horror Podcast, we do the Sinister Six.
Okay.
So it's six questions that are opinion based on horror, and I won't ask you all of them, but I will ask you one of them just to see what your answer is, and that'll tell me whether horror is your thing or not. Midsummer or Hereditary?
I haven't seen them.
Okay, that's
Hereditary scared the trailer scared the fuck out of me, and I was like, I need to understand. I can only watch movies like this after 9 p.m.
sure
minimum, so then I have to deal with the trauma of watching a horror movie that late at night anyway, those are both on my list though of wanting to watch, so you know what, I'm gonna move those up in my priorities so that I can answer that question.
I'll tell you why we asked that question, because they're from the same director and they are wildly different horror films. One of them is very traditionally a horror film. One of them is very not traditionally a horror film. So the reason that Midsommar, we always
have, I really wanted to see, and I just like it bumped up with a bunch of other things, and now it's one of those sitting there that I wanted to watch.
Midsommar is brilliant. It's
part of this podcast reasoning is I'm catching up with some movies I have not been able to see for whatever
reason. I will tell you this right now. If I didn't, if I knew that you hadn't seen Midsommar, that would have been my choice.
Okay.
Instead of this, I chose this one honestly for a lot of different reasons. But yeah, Midsommar is one of those movies. You definitely have to take the time to watch it. But it's like, I would say in the last 10 to 15 years, it's in my top five. Like, it's such well done, good movie. And it's definitely like a watchable movie. It's not like Climax, which is chaotic. Like, you can sit down and you can watch Midsommar.
Okay.
You're going to take a breather afterwards, but you can sit there and you can watch Midsommar. It's a beautiful movie too. It's gorgeous.
So I will save one of my tradition with a lot of horrors stuff is to have a 20-minute comedy ready to go right after, so I can cleanse my, before I go to bed, that my last thoughts aren't whatever I was watching. Cause I don't want to have,
It's fair. Totally fair.
So, awesome. Well, thank you for joining me. Thanks for coming to Film Club.
Of course, appreciate man. It.
And
also, by the way, congrats on all your weight loss. I wanted to say that. Like, I've noticed that. I've seen it, dude. You've been kicking ass with that. So
thank you. Keep it going. Okay, I will. Yeah. Thank you for those words. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in, and thank you for watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein.
You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein in the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play and rewind this. This speech that is timeless. Love it like it or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it isn't tough. We spend a lot of time at the cinema. It's just me and my friends, we watch plenty stuff. For movies, yeah, I've been above. Whether big or they small, no, for me don't make a difference. Love them. You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein in the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play and rewind this. This speech that is timeless. Love it like it or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it didn't hit. No, gotta lose it. Watch movies with my friends, bringing joy, that's the blueprint. So come on and let's do this. Leave pain behind us and relax your mind. Come watch a movie with Silas.